Welcome back to After the Buzzer. I am Gordy Jones, and joining me from Saucon Valley Country Club near Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, where he's covering the Senior U.S. Open, is that Mike Gross. Hello, Mike.
Hello from the links, my man.
And as the Warriors just won their fourth championship in the last 8 years, we have with us today Matt Steinmetz, a longtime Bay Area sports media person. He currently works for 95.7 The Game in San Francisco, which is the Warriors' flagship station. And significantly, he is a former Franklin and Marshall point guard. So welcome to Matt Steinmetz.
Thanks, guys. What's going on?
Not much. So we talked the other day, Matt, specifically about Steph Curry and how this was sort of, I don't know if it's his crowning achievement, but it's certainly high in the pantheon anyway. And you had some interesting things to say about him, and I'll just read back to what you said, how he's Jordan, Bird, Magic, and LeBron. Curry's there in the conversation with the greatest players I've ever seen in my life. And you said it took you a while to reach that position, but you kind of got worn down over the years, and you finally reached that. And the other thing was, that I thought was interesting, was, you know, you've always been a Larry Bird guy, and you said, I still think Larry is a better player than Steph, but Bird didn't have the impact Steph has. So I wonder if you could just expand on those ideas for our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, over the years, watching Curry play for 12 or 13 years, like, he's just kind of turned some things, made him a 180, if you know what I mean. Like, you grow up trying to get a good shot close to the basket. That's the way you were supposed to, you know, or the way our generation grew up. And I mean, this guy has just, he's more difficult to defend the further away from the basket that he is. Mm-hmm. And he draws so much attention to himself far away from the basket. So like when you kind of start to think about that kind of thing, then that's where you realize his impact. And he, obviously the fact that he can make shots from 25 or 30 feet and get one more point is, you know, it's going to make him one of the great scorers, but he's figured out a way to use that strength to build off his game to now become somebody who, if you're on the court with him, you're just going to benefit from him being on the court, just standing there. Mm-hmm. And that's where that's where his impact is, to me, profound.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you mentioned another great, when you were talking about Steph, you mentioned Kareem, where you said, right, where your quote was, Curry demands the same attention Kareem demanded, and he demands it 30 feet from the hoop. He's changed the geometry of the game, I guess, is the point to be made there.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you know, and we've all seen it happen a lot. I mean, Steph Curry will bring the ball up court, he'll cross half court, he'll get to 38 feet from the basket, and two guys will come at him to get the ball out of his hands. And, you know, you just start thinking about all the great players who got double teamed, mm-hmm, particularly the centers. Mm-hmm. And I just started thinking, they all got double teamed, you know, 6-8 feet from the basket. Well, mm-hmm, that's effective. Don't get me wrong, but when you're occupying two defenders 35 feet from the basket, it actually opens things up more almost, mm-hmm, for a teammate than a traditional great center who demanded a double team.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, it's so interesting because I've been thinking exactly the same thing. And the comparison to Kareem is so good, Matt, but it's that turned inside out. It used to be the basketball that we all grew up with was, if you had one of these great centers, you threw it into the block and the defense did something to react to that, and your offense, half-court offense, was your reaction to that. Now it's this guy who's 38 feet from the basket and the defense reacts to that. And that's what the half-court offense comes from that the Warriors have done. It's really is an interesting impact that he's had on the game. And he's at the point now where he aces this idea of making your teammates better. I think he's A+ in that category. In a different way than Bird was, you know, but still he aces it, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just remember growing up, you know, if you're playing one-on-one, you could score off your guy for the most part. And then you play two-on-two half court, and it was just, you know, it was pretty easy. Because, you know, one guy would come out to get the ball, and then he'd go backdoor, and there's no help, and he'd just lay it in. And three-on-three got a little harder, and four, but, you know, five-on-five is way more difficult because there's so many guys down at that end of the floor. But he basically turns games into, you know, three-on-threes and four-on-fours. And when you're operating with that much space, it just gets harder and harder and harder to defend. But if you don't play him a certain way either, then, you know, you've got to live with the consequences that he may make. I mean, like, you know, he may make 9 of 14 three-pointers in the same kind of way that Jabbar might make 9 of 14 hook shots in a day. But it's one extra point. Mm-hmm. But it's an extra point.
Yeah.
So... you know, that's the part I hate in a way, but I mean, I feel like you get to a point where you can't hold it against Curry because first time that he could reach the basket from 24 feet or whatever, that he started shooting that, and he perfected it by far more than any other player who ever has. Yeah. And then he turned that skill into, well, how am I really going to start messing with it? And it was just becoming good in all the other areas. So, you know, you can't just let him get his 30 because he'll get 45 if you don't guard him out there.
It really is something else. Here's on another topic, Matt. How much do the Warriors dislike the Memphis Grizzlies?
You know, it's interesting. It's like they keep a lot of that to themselves until it's safe to do it. But you know what it tells me, honestly, is that they at least see the Grizzlies, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I think. And like Memphis is interesting team to me because it's one of those teams where, like, they're completely different when Morant's not on the court. So it's like, okay, if you have a backup quarterback to Randall Cunningham, well, do you want your backup to be Randall Cunningham, or do you want your backup to be, you know, a pocket passer?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because if it's a pocket passer, then you're going to have to change the way you play. But if it's a running quarterback, you're not going to be as good as with Randall Cunningham, who could, you know, do both. And I'm not talking about what, you know, he could throw it to, you know what I mean? Well, so when Memphis plays without him, it feels like they just know a certain way they have to play.
Mm-hmm.
And then with him, I mean, he's a great player, so they're still really, really good. But I do think that they're going to be an issue for the Warriors. I don't know if it's next year or after that, but they're like if the Warriors slow down a little bit, they're the one team that I think can get them because they're just so young and athletic and long and you know, they're pretty hungry too.
Yeah, they are. Hey, I had one more Curry thing. There was a certain segment of observers of the league who seemed to think it was a big deal him winning the finals MVP. I never quite understood that because it seems like, you know, if he never won the finals MVP, it's not like he wasn't an all-time great player. What was your take on that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, to me, that was something that if you didn't like Steph Curry, you could you had that in your back pocket. You just always had it, whether it was fair or not. Mm-hmm. By the same token, he, I don't know, it's weird. Like, and I was trying to think of that this too. When I, this is why I like talking to, you know, you guys. It's like when I was watching Bird and Magic, there was just no talk about, well, who's going to be the finals MVP before the, it was about who's going to win the series.
Right. That's, like, nobody, that's sort of the bottom line.
Cared.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I finals MVP. That.
Oh, Magic. Oh, good. Great.
Yeah.
He, him or Kareem.
Right.
I mean, so like that, that was not, I mean, I thought, yeah, I didn't, I thought that was kind of an easy thing to pick on him for. And, you know, to me, there would be bigger things to pick on him for than that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
if you really want to, you really want to criticize him or nitpick him, to me, the finals MVP is it just didn't work out for him three times. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I thought it was a really odd thing. Let me ask you this too about the team in general. They did not play great over the last couple months of the regular season. When did you think that they kind of, you know, hit their stride as far as being a championship level team?
I mean, I didn't really think they were going to win it all until around the Memphis series, because, and this is going to be the interesting thing moving forward, is, like, say what you want, their core of Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry, I mean, they're not as good as they were in 18 and 19 when they won it and then lost to Toronto. They're just not. But they got guys around them now who are to me better than the guys that those other teams had around them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what exactly was the question again?
Well, when did they evolve into a championship level team?
But yeah, I'm sorry. So like, they play the first 50 games without Klay Thompson,
right?
And then he comes back and he's up and down at the start of his comeback. Then Draymond Green got hurt. Then Curry got hurt.
Right.
And they never played together till the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, my thought was, you know what? They haven't played together since the playoffs. Now they got to get everybody back. The playoffs are a 10-week grind. You know, Klay's coming off two and a half years of injury. Draymond was hurt for 50 games. Curry's coming back at the end of the season. So it's like, it felt like one of those years where maybe stuff wasn't going to fall into place. But the way it all worked out, some of it was planning, some wasn't. They got healthy, you know, right as the playoffs started, and then you kind of realize that there wasn't going to be an adjustment period because they'd been playing together for 10 years.
Yeah, right.
And then I was like, oh, I get it. There's nobody out there that's so much better than them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, they weren't by far the best team in the league. And it wasn't even close. It's just that every team they played, they could beat. Mm-hmm. And then they beat them because it's who they are, kind of.
How about going forward, Matt? Because they have a lot of interesting situations with their rosters. They have some intriguing talent that really wasn't a factor in this run. What do you think they're going to do next? What do you think this offseason is going to be like?
Everybody got up in arms out here about Brian Windhorst saying it was a checkbook championship or something like that.
Yeah.
And the one thing is, he's right. I mean, their payroll is just absolutely beyond comprehension in a way. So, I mean, I've been saying this for a couple of years, you know, hey guys, at some point, stuff's going to have to, you know, they're going to have to pay the piper. And they, you know, and a lot of fans out here are like, what are you talking about? They'll just keep spending ad infinitum. And I'm like, no, it's impossible. And so I think this is, to me, what's interesting is, do you want to run it back? Okay, so now you realize you want it, and now you want to try to win it again. Well, okay. If you want to run it back, it's like it's never been easier to do. Just re-sign Payton II, re-sign Looney, re-sign Porter, extend Poole, and extend Wiggins. Just do all those things.
Do all that, yeah.
And you will have the same team next year, and go for it. But again, it doesn't like it doesn't. They have all the money in the world, but even all the money in the world isn't going to be enough because, like, I can't imagine them, okay, we're going to extend Jordan Poole. What's that look like? About 120 over 4 years. Okay, let's do it. Then Looney. I don't, like, the funny thing, Looney's an interesting guy. I don't know what he could get. I thought he was going to get more last time. He ended up getting $5 million a year. Would somebody pay him $10 million a year? Yeah, maybe. Mm. Well, $10 million
more
for
than
him
five, is, I would think, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
$10 million for him is really $25 million with the tax and all that crap.
Yeah.
And Payton II, can he get a mid-level somewhere? Maybe. Well, if he gets a mid-level somewhere, that means he's going to be another 8 or 9 or whatever. So I think, like, there's going to be a move at some point, maybe not this offseason, where you're going to look at it and say, oh, okay, I get it. They had to do something. Like, and I'll just throw this one out there because I thought, like, it was whatever, a rumor, but my first thought was, oh, okay, I get it. Rumor had it that the Kings would give up 4 for Jordan Poole. And, of course, Warrior fans are like, oh, get out of here. No chance. Never. No way. And I get it. I'm with you. You're right. But you're going to have to pay Jordan Poole 25, 26, 28, and 30 over the next 4 years.
He is a problem from that standpoint, I think.
It's a huge problem looming.
Yeah.
It just is.
Yeah. So, now, something that Windhorst, I thought I heard overheard Windhorst saying this. I'm watching ESPN in the background, you know. I thought he said something about how they sold off part of the ownership of the arena. Is that a thing?
He sold. So Lakob is like, he represents about 10 people who all have big, big money.
Right.
Like, he himself isn't a, I mean, he may have $2 billion, but he doesn't have 15 or 10, you know, 10 or 15 billion.
Right.
But he's got a lot of people behind him, and he's really good at, you know, as, okay, the window's open. All right, go ahead. Keep going. The window's open. And he had trouble, you know, selling them over the last 2 years, but he did it somehow. And, you know, now he's going to have to sell them again, kind of. It's funny because the one move that he hated or, you know, that they get criticized for was the Kelly Oubre move. Because they found out they lost Klay Thompson, and then they thought, you know what, we're still pretty good. Just let's get a player in here who we think's pretty good. And they brought him in, and he stinks. Kelly Oubre stinks. But anyway, you know, they paid him $15 million, which was actually 60, and, you know, he said some things about that, like, you know, probably shouldn't have done that one, you know, like, that one was one, maybe, you know, that they weren't crazy about.
How about, to what extent do you think they were smart, and to what extent do you think they were lucky in that they were able to, in effect, turn a Durant sign-and-trade type thing into, eventually, indirectly, into Wiggins, right?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because you could have made a case. Nobody wanted to hear it at the time, but you could have made a case that the Warriors should have let Durant go. Then, you know, bit the bullet on a Draymond extension, and then maybe just kind of gone forward with Klay and Steph. And not that you're going to let Draymond go, but just put him off for a year. I mean, the funny thing is, I mean, it was huge. There's two things to me that stand out. And one is, you know, why Durant do that? Well, he could get the extra year. I get that. But if there was so much acrimony and he really hated it out here, he would have just been like, yeah, I'm out, guys. See ya.
Yeah. Right. That's
but,
right.
But it's I think it's Bob Myers. I really do. Yeah. You know, he was an agent. He's just a good, you know, he's a good guy. People like him. He's honest, straightforward, tries to do the right thing. And I just think he was able to hit something with Durant and the Nets saying, you know, if we can do something that helps everybody, would you be interested? And like, you know, yeah, Bob, that's fine. If that's what happens, as opposed to hit the pike, you know, so that was the big one. But then it's like the trade itself. I mean, I was like, okay, I didn't get it. Cause like I almost, at the time I thought, just let him walk. I'd rather have him walk than have D'Angelo Russell at $35 million, because nobody was going to pay Russell at that point, because they'd already signed Kyrie. D'Angelo Russell was in big trouble that offseason. And when Durant said he wanted to go to the Nets, Kyrie was there. They'd already signed him. So D'Angelo Russell was just sitting there. And the Warriors just said, you know what? Let's just get a $30 million, $25 million asset in here, and we'll move him down the line. And, like, that's what they did.
And then they turned him into Wiggins. That worked out pretty well.
Exactly.
That worked out so well. Wow. That's crazy. Yeah.
It was funny because, like, when they got Russell, it's not like they were trying to play a game for a while. Like, no, we like D'Angelo. Yeah, you know,
remember
we
that. Think,
and I was like, you've got the best point guard in basketball. And, you know, I know people talk about his position and whether he's, you know, whatever. But it's like, if you bring a point guard in here, he doesn't fit. Right away, the guy doesn't fit. So I was always like, this is bullshit. Like, there's no chance this guy's part of their long-term plans.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he just didn't fit.
Yeah. Isn't it funny that one of the what-ifs with the Warriors, one of many, is that if history were a little bit different, Curry, Thompson, and Wiggins would all be with the Minnesota Timberwolves today.
Incredible.
I mean, because Curry, when he was drafted, as you well know, when he was drafted in 2009, the T-Wolves had the two picks right before the Warriors, and they picked two point guards, Ricky Rubio, which was defensible at the time, and Johnny Flynn, which wasn't. And then a couple years later, there was a trade in the I don't know how you could probably address this more readily than I, about Klay Thompson for Kevin Love, which Jerry West and others derided, and it ultimately wasn't. So Curry, Thompson, and Wiggins, we'd be talking about the Minnesota Timberwolves dynasty today.
Yeah. I mean, the one to me, and it's funny because, why can't I think of his name? My Timberwolves guy, David Kahn.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he kind of went into hiding, and then he came out recently and said, well, you know, the first three or four teams passed on Curry too. And I was thinking, it's not, stop it.
Yeah.
It's not even about one or the other. It's about you made a big, like, you tried to do something. You know, you got way too cute.
Mm-hmm.
When you didn't need to do that, plain and simple. And man, did it cost him.
And here's the other piece of that. This is detailed in Jack McCallum's book, Golden Days. Curry actually wanted to play for the Knicks to the point who had the eighth pick, and to the point that he actually wouldn't work out for the Warriors before the draft. But the guy who was the general manager then, Larry Riley, said, hey, we're going to draft this guy at number 7. And obviously, that was just a brilliant move by Larry Riley. And I wonder if you could speak to that, because we talked about that the other day, how Larry Riley's kind of this modest guy who's really actually a very crucial figure in Warriors history.
Yeah, and it's funny because I have a buddy, a guy named Dave Del Grande, who covered the Warriors way back in the day, and he ended up having a real good relationship with Don Nelson.
Right.
And 2 or 3 weeks ago, Dave Del Grande on Facebook, you know, put some photos up because he'd stayed at Don Nelson's house,
mm-hmm.
And they, you know, vacationing, and he wrote up a little thing and said, you know, I asked Don about Steph Curry, and Don said, I drafted that guy. And I'm like, I said, hey, Dave, I guess he can say that, and nobody's going to come down his road now because nobody ever will. But he was just the coach. Like, Larry Riley was the GM.
Right.
But Nelson, you know, when Nelson's a coach, he makes all the decisions. Yeah, he made all the decisions that were good. So was he involved? Yeah, but like now Don Nelson talks like, oh yeah, I discovered Steph Curry, you know? And Larry Riley, just every time I see Larry Riley, I just make a reference to, nobody gives him credit about Curry, and he just kind of laughs because he doesn't really care at this point. But no, I mean, the other thing about this, yeah, this is a story. God, this somebody told me this a long time ago, after a couple years after the draft. But right around seven, there was also Jordan Hill.
Mm-hmm.
He was somebody who was being considered. Warriors, even back then, Warriors need a big man. Warriors need a big man. Well, if Curry falls, we'll take Curry. But there's Jordan Hill, and he's a big athletic guy. And so the Warriors had Jordan Hill in for a workout, and, you know, it went fine. And then they took him out to dinner and, you know, talked to him. And at the very end, they said, do you have any questions for us, you know, about the team or the city? And Jordan Hill said, yeah, hey, what's the nightlife like in Oakland? And, you know, the joke is that when he said that, then it became a no-brainer. They were taking Steph Curry.
I like it.
And he went next. He went right after him.
And he was just a guy. Just a guy.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about all this stuff with the Timberwolves, and I'm on irony overload here because I was listening to a podcast while I was driving up here today, on which the coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves was talking about coaching D'Angelo Russell, who's a great guy, according to our buddy Chris Finch, a great guy, a great passer, all that stuff. So I couldn't help but thinking about that when you were talking about the Timberwolves connection.
Yeah,
it's funny because Finch, I kept in touch a little bit over the years, especially lately, and. I think he's done a great job there.
Yeah.
I feel like he had to kind of make a deal with the devil. the deal was that they would play hard for him, mm-hmm. which they've never, you know, they played defense at a level they've never played before him. Yeah. So he's got them to play at this really high level of energy and effort,
mm-hmm.
but because he's gotten him to do that, he knows that he can't really come down on him for mistakes and because they're really young, you know, they got a lot to learn, and so they do a lot of, you know, knucklehead stuff. But he knows that he can't do both. He can't, kill them for their overzealousness, because he needs them to be that way to compete. And now he's just like, he's got them to do that. And so now he's got to funnel it in, and they got to get, you know, they got to get tighter. They got to get more efficient. But it feels like the hard part is, and they may need to make some moves, but it feels like the hard part is over. Like they play for him.
Yeah.
It's interesting. We had him on here a couple weeks ago, and then this on this podcast I was listening to today with Ryan Russillo, he really talks about how he has to balance all these different things. He has to keep all these different plates in the air, like you were just talking about, and how much of a challenge, a constant challenge that is, you know, for a coach. And that's really what it is. But you're right. He's got them. These guys are so athletic. We can't be sitting back defensively. We got to get after it. Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is like, you know, I always like, so he's, I'm 57. So that makes him, I think, 52 ish.
Yeah.
And he didn't get the job. So like, you know, he didn't become a head coach till he's about 48.
Yeah.
And like, that's now I look at something like that and I'm like, boy, that's about perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you get a job, like I'm looking at a guy like, you know, what, I don't dislike the guy, but like a guy like Eric Musselman gets hired at 35, mm-hmm. gets fired, gets another job. Now he's done. You know what? You're a lot older at 48 than 35, especially if, you know, for the last 20 years, you've been on an NBA bench.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a grind. Yeah.
You you touched on this earlier, Matt, about the whole decision they have to make about how their two most significant free agents this year are Gary Payton II and Kayvon Looney. And I saw that you had Anthony Slater of The Athletic on your show the other day, and he was talking specifically about Looney and how he's maybe a priority because they don't know what they have yet with James Wiseman and whether they can, you know, afford to let a good big man slip away because, you know, Wiseman looks like he might be good, but
right.
they can't be sure. Do you have any read at all on what Wiseman might be?
I mean, the issue with the Warriors is that Looney, you know, he played every single game for the Warriors
yeah.
this year, like 104.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And Wiseman played zero.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's why Slater said he's the biggest priority and why I started to agree with him after he made the point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Wiseman can be okay,
mm-hmm.
but he's just now, it's hard to explain, but he's going to have to not only just fit in now, but he's going to have to fit into a championship team.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either going to be harder or easier.
Mm-hmm.
But because he hasn't played, like, I almost feel bad for the kid. But if they can, you know, I mean, he's not going to be a star at the start because they're just, at best case scenario, he's JaVale McGee for them
right.
to start. So now he's a number two pick and his third, you know, he didn't play his first year and second year really. Now his third year, now he's pretty good his third year. Well, what do you do with him?
Yeah, it's like it seems like he has a higher ceiling than Looney, but he's also got a much lower floor. At least with Looney, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a pretty steady play on both ends, and
oh, definitely.
You know, he's
the problem with Wiseman is at this point you can't trade him.
Right.
Not because maybe nobody wants him, but because I'm not giving him up yet because I don't even know what he is.
Right.
So now he's got to play another year to make that determination and.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll probably, you know, his rookie year, he played half the year. He had some good moments, mm-hmm. but he was lost defensively. So, you know, and then that's the other thing. You know, he's going to have to play on a team that wants to win a title. But if he's lost defensively, then what do you do? You know, but I wouldn't give up on him.
No, he's got potential for sure.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I agree. That's a funny one.
And I guess the other one is, you know, if Otto Porter's a free agent, but I could possibly see them letting him walk and giving those minutes to Kuminga because he did play some this year, and every now and then you saw some real flashes from him. Well, what's your read on him?
Yeah, he's very athletic, and plus, you know, I mean, I guess Porter was on the veteran minimum,
yeah.
so you know, could he go out and get $5 or $6 million? I don't, you know, like. Porter plays the way they want Kuminga to play.
Right.
But Kuminga's too young to do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, Kuminga is going to play a lot more next season just because I think that's going to be a lot of what they do. They're not going to play guys, you know. I mean, do you really want Curry, Draymond, and Thompson to play 75 each? No.
Mm-hmm.
Now you want them to play 60, so that leaves room for all those other guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Moses Moody being another guy. I mean, that he didn't play much in the finals, but they had him out there against Dallas, and he looked like certainly didn't look like the game was too big for him. It looked like he knew what he was doing. You know what I mean?
No, he looks like he knows how to play for sure. And like everybody out here is really gung ho on all those guys: Moody, Wiseman,
mm-hmm.
Kuminga, Poole. And they are. They're really good young players. But there's a big difference between good players and, like, the championship type of players.
Right.
Like they had. Like, I don't – like, I'm not convinced, you know, if the Warriors were sitting with Maxey of Philly, that people wouldn't be like, well, hey, they're sitting with that kid too. He's pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
But, you know, I'm not saying Maxey's not, but, you know, obviously there's a long way to go from that to – you know, winning championships and being a great player and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's well. Anyway, here's another thing. This is how has the transition been to from Oakland to San Francisco, from the old building to the new building? What's the vibe? Has the fan base changed? How does it feel out there in terms of the team's relationship with the community?
Yeah, I mean, the team's relationship with the community is fine. I mean, the one thing, when Lakeup bought the team back in 2010, he basically didn't make any secret that he wanted to build an arena in San Francisco. So all the resistance that he faced was, you know, between 2010 and 2015. And so we got this thing built. It didn't cost any public money. Now the Warriors have a dynasty. It's mostly gone as well as it could possibly go. You know, the arena itself is pretty exorbitant, and obviously there's a different fan base there. But they have a lot of rich people out here, man. And they can pay that money, and as long as the Warriors win, you know, they're going to sell out and all that stuff. And, you know, I was thinking about this today, you know, it's the big question's going to be now, because they've answered all the big questions. Can they come back and win it? You know, to me, the next question is, well, is there life after Curry?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is he the culture, or is it bigger than him?
Right.
And that's one of those things where I'm going to need to see that the culture is bigger than him before I believe it, to tell you the truth.
Mm, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting, and that's a good call. It's hard to know, like, that.
I guess one of the other things is...
Let me throw this at you, because just wondering, you know, what do you think? Like, I think the Celtics and the Lakers are just, you know, they're a little different. So... if, let's say the Warriors win, let's say they win another title just for kicks, and then Curry retires in 3 years, like, I think there's a chance that it could go like the Bulls.
Mm.
Like, why would a free agent want to come here after he's gone?
Mm. Oh, right.
When he was a homegrown guy,
right,
and won 5 rings. When everyone knows that even a free agent coming to win rings isn't quite that good.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So, well, that's one thing I wonder. And they also have, you know, Durant came. He was great. And I know it's Durant, but he just didn't feel as appreciated as he wanted to feel.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's never going to be another Steph Curry. There's just never going to be another Steph Curry out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's never going to be even close. And so who's, like, it ought, to me, it feels like it's going to have to continue homegrown, because I don't, like, you know, just hypothetically, you know, Damian Lillard, why no chance I would come here if I were Damian Lillard.
Yeah, sad.
You know, or anybody who's like a really good young player, I'd pick a team that's never won it or stay where I am, you know.
And so the key is probably going to be that they not do what the Bulls kind of did with Jerry Krause, kind of, you know, and they kind of just unloaded everything. And that one, they had a couple of teams there with Khalid El-Amin and Bryce Drew. And oh, my God,
right.
You're going to have to transition in terms of the overall roster much better than the Bulls did. But that still doesn't answer. That still doesn't completely solve what's the point you're making, though, Matt.
Because, right. I mean, like, yeah. I'm just, let's say, you know, the one thing I think the Warriors would love to be is the Lakers. They want to be the Lakers. They want to, you know, if they they wouldn't be able to go out and get anybody they want just because of their reputation. So let's say 5 years, 3 to 5 years from now, the thing is, Curry's kind of got to be out of the picture, though, or still playing. But like, the, if the Warriors said, "Hey, we're," you could see they're gearing up for free agency. They've gotten under the cap, and they're going after Luka Doncic.
Yeah,
I'm not coming here if I'm Doncic.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I guess you could say, you know what? You know, I know Steph brought this franchise 5 rings. I'm gonna try to continue it. Really? Why? You're never gonna be him.
Yeah.
Go stay in Dallas and win them their second title of all time and be Dirk.
Right.
So that's the other thing I wanna see. I wanna see if they can get a big boy who's not somebody they drafted after Curry leaves.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's a pretty good analysis, because it is true that you don't want to say they were lucky, but things definitely broke the right way. You know, when you take Curry at number 7 in 09, you take Clay at number 11 in 2011, and you take Draymond at number 35 in 2012. That's 3 Hall of Fame players, none of them in the top 5 in the draft. It's really kind of amazing how things broke their way.
Yeah, that's, I mean, yeah, it's incredible. And they came, like, you know, then you have to ask, well, nobody was shooting threes like Steph, and then Clay came along and he could do it too, and then Draymond's a big who can pass and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to say, well, I guess, was it the game that had already changed and they kind of perfected it, or did they help move the game even in that crazier direction?
Mm-hmm.
Because they kind of figured it out. They had one guy who, you know, they had two guys who, you know, I always just think, yeah, it's a 40 to 50% shot when they take a three.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you know, then you get a passer like Draymond and you got a big problem on your hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Three Hall of Fame players.
The thing that separates them from me in this era is the guy who is their guy, which obviously is Curry, is never the guy who's standing there bouncing the ball, going one on one, while the other four guys are standing there watching him.
Mm.
Like Harden, like Doncic, like Trae Young, and so on. He's never that guy. What he does without the ball in his hands is as impressive as with, I think, and that's what sets them apart to me. I mean, I just, that's why it's so much fun to watch him play.
Yeah, I mean, there is no doubt. I mean, he'll probably, I guess, go down, and it's funny because we, you know, Havlicek was great without the ball, Hornacek was really good, Reggie Miller. Well, I mean, you can't tell me any of them were better than Curry.
No.
You know, I mean, he just... Yeah, he can run around. One time I said, and then he got to guard Curry, and, you know, Curry's just running around out there like a nitwit. Mm-hmm. And people got so pissed at me, and I was like, I tried to tell him, I said, Gordy, in West Reading, Pennsylvania, like, nitwit was kind of a good thing. Yeah, he's a nitwit. We all loved him. You know what I mean? But they didn't like it so much out here.
Language barrier.
You just gotta educate him one fan at a time, Matt.
Exactly. There you go.
So, what's your take on Iguodala? I mean, there seems to be some expectation that he might retire, but nothing seems imminent either. I mean, to me, he would be a natural to slide into that Mike Brown assistant coach's role if he wanted that. Well, what is your read there?
I mean, to me, whether he plays or not is kind of irrelevant, because he really didn't help after the first, you know, 15 or 20 games.
Right.
I mean, to me, and I mean this kindly, he's one of the greatest gamers of the system I've ever seen. And he may just want to be Udonis Haslam another year.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, play a ton of golf and do what he's doing from that side. Like, problem with a guy like that becoming an assistant coach is, you know, only 3 years ago, he's making $15 million a year.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so now he's going to become an assistant coach for $700. And yeah. Especially a guy like that.
Yeah, because he's
got a lot going on.
I was going to say, he's invested his money pretty wisely, too. He's a player as far as the financial end of it is, too.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. He gravitated toward that when he got out here.
Right.
Yeah, he's a big boy, money-wise, for sure.
Yeah.
And here's another irony. He was briefly a Memphis Grizzly.
Yes. They don't forget that do they?
That's another small part of why it's you know, there's some nastiness there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Matt, I'm just curious. You started at the Contra Costa Times in 1995, covering the Warriors there, and then you later worked for NBC Sports Bay Area. I almost called it NBC Sports Philadelphia. How do you think covering the league has changed over these last 30 some years?
What can we be stumped, Matt?
Boy, it's a good question. There is something about the certainty of the media and the debates around the players and the teams has definitely changed in the more confrontational and more personalized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, everybody's got to, you know, and I'm in there too, you know. Anything you say is now out there, and if it's not right, you're going to get hammered for it. And then before you know it, people are talking more about the people who are talking about the game than the game itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a big part of it. You know, like, I just, you know, when I was starting to cover the team as a beat writer, we just, I mean, stay out of it. You know, we're no issue. Just, you know, write what you see and all that kind of stuff. So that's changed a great deal, I think. Now you gotta come with something. You gotta try to stand out somehow. Mm-hmm. And you know, it used to be by, you know, writing a good game story. And now it's more about, you know, you can get that done in a sentence or two with the right platform.
Mm-hmm.
So that's to me a big thing. Trying to think what else. I mean, the money's gotten to the point where there is a huge now, you know, divide, but that's not just between the players and the media. It's between the players and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the media just happens to be a group that works with the players that also, you know, makes significantly less than them, like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, that's something too that's changed. These guys are like way more famous than when I covered the Warriors in 95. Mm-hmm. They're just, you know, they're all over the place. Everybody knows who they are, and it's tough to get to them.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a different world we live in, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I had. I don't know if Mike had something else you wanted to.
I think they're the most interesting. We're talking about the most interesting team in sports right now.
For sure.
And it's great to get to somebody who's right next to it. So we appreciate it, Matt. But
yeah, no problem. You mean it's not the Phillies?
It's F&M. It's F&M men's basketball.
with my guy Kyle Schwarber leading off.
Schwarber is a hell of a slow pitch softball player, that guy.
Yeah, no problem, guys. I enjoyed it.
All right, thanks so much for your time, and we hope we cross paths with you sometime again soon.
Absolutely, guys. Have a good weekend, man.
Take care. Be well. So, what jumped out to you about our conversation with Matt there, Mike?
Well, a couple things. One is at the very beginning there when he was talking about something that I have been thinking, which is how comparing Steph to Kareem in terms of how the way he's turned half court offense sort of inside out. Mm-hmm. I think that's really interesting, and I think that's definitely what's happened. And I think as we got into at the end of the conversation, part of that is that he is so good without the ball, mm-hmm. that there's so much movement going on. And as you said, it has changed the geometry of the game, mm-hmm. but nobody is taking advantage of that new geometry to anywhere near the same degree that these.
I agree with that. It is striking, and it's because they are all so unique, and because it doesn't appear that there's any great jealousy among the players. Everybody wants to share it. Everybody wants to fill their little niche, and it's interesting because when Matt started covering the Warriors, they were in the midst of a long playoff drought. Until these guys came along, there wasn't much to recommend the Warriors, really.
And supposedly always had a really good, loyal fan base.
Right.
I think both of the times that we've had Matt on, I asked him about that transition now from Oakland to San Francisco, which is really almost a little bit of a cultural change.
Mm-hmm.
And is that sort of almost neighborhood connection the same? It probably isn't the same, but it probably doesn't matter. They're winning games, they're printing money, and whatever.
Yeah, they're certainly doing that. And you know, and Curry is really the impetus behind all of that. It's just such a unique player and such a marketable, recognizable player that's where all this starts. There's no question about that. So
he's gonna up being one of the all-time players that you connect with a franchise.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to be one of the all-timers in that. He might be the all-timer or close to it in that regard.
Yeah, it's hard to envision too many players. Maybe Giannis will turn out to be that guy. I mean, maybe Luka. I mean, you know, it's interesting. It's all become like we're on a first name basis with all these guys too. You know.
except we aren't. You know.
I mean, you know, I'm being flip, obviously, but still, it is kind of interesting. So tell us about the U.S. Senior Open. Obviously, our local guy Jim Furyk is involved, and you're up there today. And
Saugus Valley, which is this fabulous facility. It was once a playground for Bethlehem Steel executives and their families. So it's this unbelievable club in Bethlehem. And they've hosted a couple other majors in the past, never the U.S. Open, but the Senior Open and the Women's Open. And Furyk played really well today, who people don't know is a local guy for us, may not know, is a local guy for us. He grew up and went to high school in Lancaster County, and he won the thing last year. He's the defending champion. He's one of, I think, seven guys who have won the U.S. Open and the Senior Open,
mm-hmm.
and played pretty well today and then bogeyed the last two holes. He had the worst of it. It rained almost all day. It was pretty brutal in the morning, and he really got the worst of it because of his tee time, but he got through it pretty well, and then, really kind of had a couple bad shots that it really cost him late in the round.
Mm-hmm.
But he's there, he's doing fine, and has a chance. What's interesting is these guys are the senior tour guys. Are the big story in golf right now is obviously the Saudi Arabian tour,
mm-hmm.
thing, and these guys are, because they're a little older, they're kind of past that.
Right.
This Saudi Arabian thing is looking like it's becoming an option for guys who are maybe in their 40s, mm-hmm. or maybe in the second half of their regular tour career, in addition to all the, you know, the cultural stuff that comes with getting in bed with Saudi Arabia,
right.
Which is a whole other deal. So the senior golf is, I think Ernie Els was being interviewed yesterday, and he said, it's almost like we're an afterthought right now. Well, I mean, the senior tour is a little bit of an afterthought, to be honest. But I think particularly so now because of this huge story that's golf related, but not really on the golf course.
It does seem to dwarf everything else. So it that's, I mean, it is, there are a lot of troubling social implications, clearly. And I don't know how it plays out and how, you know, where things go from here. What is your expectation?
Well, the only thing I would say is completely separate from the fact that it's Saudi Arabia. I think this is terrible for golf because golf suffers if it becomes an appearance money sport, in my view. One of the things that makes golf, well, let's be honest, this is a sport you can, this is a game you can play smoking a cigar.
Yeah.
So if this is going to be like a serious competitive sport, then everybody's got to be at the starting line playing for the same thing. Playing under the same sort of circumstances. And you take away the 36-hole cut, you take away, you take away the incentive that comes with, everybody gets paid based on what they shoot. You get the number at the end of the day, and that's all that matters. And I think the sport erodes. And also, if you have the, if these guys are just mercenaries and there's no clearly defined major league, then I think golf is stepping in the direction of tennis, which really nobody pays attention to except for 4 weeks a year.
Right.
The four major championships. Right. Well, that's how golf could go. This is, you know, the four, which also has four major championships.
Right.
It's hard to kill a guy like Dustin Johnson for taking $150 million to play in eight golf tournaments, and he can still play in the majors,
right,
which competitively are probably really the only thing he really cares about now. You can't kill him for that. But on the other hand, do you want to get in business with Saudi Arabia, which is using you to launder its image?
Right.
Do you want to do that? I mean, I don't think you do. It's much different, like to hold an event in Saudi Arabia. I mean, they're like the Formula. There's a Formula One Grand Prix in Saudi Arabia. There's there have been golf tournaments in Saudi Arabia for a long time. But actually being in business with these, with the Saudi Arabian ruling regime, is a much different thing than doing business in Saudi Arabia.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I just think it's awful. I think it's unqualifiedly an awful thing.
Yeah, it seems, it does seem like there's a lot of ramifications to it that, you know, really kind of make you hold your nose, I think, for a lot of people, for sure.
That's right. Yeah, hold your nose. That's right. And you know, Phil, and the other thing is Phil Mickelson, who apparently has a gargantuan gambling problem, and it certainly looks for all the world like he's getting in bed with Saudi Arabia to pay off his gambling debts.
Wow.
And then he had to go into a press conference and say, well, the Saudi Arabians they've done some questionable things, but that's how badly I want to see things change on the tour. That's how I want to affect change on the tour. Stop it, Phil. Please.
Yes, yeah, that's a bad look.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, Phil. Check that guy off my list.
So I think on that note, I think we'll say goodbye for another week. I'm Gordy. That's Mike, and we'll see you down the road.
See you later.